to ask the two panelists to just briefly speak about your experience, perhaps at York, and what you've studied here, the organization that you represent and your role within it. And also, if you can just talk a little bit about your career journey, maybe what inspired you along your way, any pivotal moments that you can discuss with all of us. So maybe, Nora, I'll start with you.
Thank you. Yeah? Thanks, Sarah. Hi, everybody. I am a York alumni, as Jeff said. I did my degree as a mature student. I was actually working here as a staff member and, you know, husband, full-time job, three kids, a dog, eight loads of laundry, the whole nine yards, and was working on my courses and did my degree part-time. So that's how I came to have my degree here at York University. So I have a history of working at York and great opportunities over the years. And my role here today, and I just want to stress that, you know, unlike Rufaro, I'm a volunteer position on a board of directors for Yellow Brick House. And Yellow Brick House is a organization for York Region that serves women and children trying to find help and rescued from domestic violence. That is the mandate of Yellow Brick House. It is an emergency shelter, 24/7 shelter, that is operate 365 days a year and has been in business for over 32 years. But it is also legal counseling, group therapy, art therapy for the children, transitional housing, some below market apartments so that a woman can get a foot up until she is completely settled and then find another apartment. It is a variety of services that help promote and help women and their children escape domestic violence and then put the pieces back together and get on with their life. So you can appreciate legal advocacy as well as education and outreach, awareness, etc. So it is an incredible organization that I'm extremely honored and proud to be part of. And I guess, how did I get there? Very briefly, no shortage of great organizations always looking for volunteers and always looking for help. But I had done lots of volunteer work over the years, as I suspect many of you have done, but it always had been related to something that I was already involved in. My kids were in soccer, you helped coach the kids. You know, you were involved in such and such an organization or a church, you participated in the organization. And as other opportunities were just winding down, it is interesting how things present themselves right when you need them. Just as I was having the thought, now what is the next thing I'm going to do? What am I going to do with myself now that these opportunities are coming to the end of their tenure? And a person that knew somebody that I knew gave me a call and said, you know, I hear you live in the area and I hear you might be interested in doing some volunteer work. Are you interested in this organization? I'd lived in the town that the shelter was, knew of it, had contributed to it over the years, but it all of a sudden matched something that had occurred to me. The opportunity to do something that I don't have membership attached to it. I don't have any other connection to it other than it's in the same community I live in. Certainly was a cause that I had a lot of concern for, and it was a great opportunity to find out more and then from that get involved. So that's how I came to be in and what Yellow Brick House is, and I'll let it go with that for now.
Okay. So as Nora mentioned, I'm a little bit different. I actually work full-time with MeToWe Social Enterprises, and what I do specifically is I organize leadership seminars to inspire youth of all ages, so ranging from about grade 6 or 7 to as old as you want to be called a youth for. And it is very specific. What we offer at MeToWe Social Enterprises is Better Choices for a Better World. So it is for people who are socially conscious. It is a very young organization, which I'm only at the beginning of my career in the nonprofit sector. But what attracted me to MeToWe is the mandate of having a philosophy of thinking of others and thinking of the ways that you can make small changes in the choices that you make, from the books you read, from the trips that you take, from the people who you listen to and who inspire you, and taking that step into inspiring yourself to think more we, which is, you know, how you go from me to we. And it sounds very it sounds very obvious almost, but if you are interested in the nonprofit sector, most of you would be, you know, a little bit socially conscious and looking at doing social justice advocacy. So what I work in right now is, as I said, Global Leadership Seminars Coordinator. So what I do is organize leadership seminars as well as facilitate workshops for young people. And it really goes into discovering what your leadership, what your own leadership style is, and how you can become a better leader. And we also offer books to supplement that, books and speaker series that can supplement all the work that we do. The most unique thing about Me to We is that it is connected to the organization Free the Children. Has anybody ever heard of Free the Children before? I see lots of heads nodding, which is really great. So Free the Children is the largest network of youth helping youth through education across the world. And so 50% of all profits that Me to We makes at the end of the year go to reducing the already low administrative cost of Free the Children. So within my work, within my everyday, I'm still making a contribution to a charitable organization, and the whole social enterprise aspect is something that is very new and hopefully is going to catch on and have a lot more people who are interested in following in social enterprises as well and building their own. Yeah, I think that's all I have to say for now. Thank you.
That's great. And if I can just ask as well, in hindsight, is there any experience perhaps that proved beneficial for you in getting you to where you are? And Nora, I imagine maybe it was fostering those relationships and networking.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the fact that, well, I think it's wonderful that it was a perfect example of how a networking opportunity presented itself. And I do feel quite strongly that, you know, sometimes when you are looking for something, just open your eyes a little wider and the opportunity is within arm's reach and often comes to you at the right time, which is pretty remarkable. The other skill set, and any organization is usually looking for a variety of skills so that they can bring expertise. So yes, we have chartered accountants that we really, really need to help make sure that our finances are in order and that we're in good stead, but you also need other skill sets. And I laugh because the reality is everything you do builds on what you have to offer an organization. And as university administrators, we're constantly trying to do a little bit more with a little less. And it's amazing how transferable those skills are to a nonprofit organization who's trying to figure out how do we squeeze a little bit more of our services out of the dollars that we have? How do we make a better claim on what we're doing and make sure that we're doing the best we can with the dollars we have? So right there, that was an experience that was extremely transferable. Doing something that is attached to a higher good is something I've always felt strongly about in working at the university. I've always had the pleasure of being in student service type of activity where you were trying to provide a service to students or promote and suggest things that would work well to help support students through their education. And that always had just a little bit higher level of need and desire that was always important to me, and transferring that into a non-for-profit organization, any of them, when you feel good about that cause and that purpose, boy, does it ever get you through the rough days and the tough days or the days where things aren't going as well as they should, because you know ultimately you are making a difference and making a positive contribution in some people's lives. Although there's the odd day where the odd student will tell you that you haven't done a darn thing for them, and that is going to happen. But overall, we're making a positive impression where we can.
And for me, as I said, I'm just starting my own career in the nonprofit sector. But what happened was I was browsing, like I've just graduated, so I was browsing the career website, and I was actually setting myself up. While I was in university, I worked very closely in student services and student administration, and I was looking at that as a career path. Browsing, you know, Career Center website, I came upon this organization, and I looked at not just what are the opportunities that are available to me, but what is it about the philosophy of the organization that is attracting me to it. And I'm so happy. Like every morning I wake up with nonprofit organizations or with budding social enterprises, you wear many hats. So although my specific skill set is in coordination and figuring out where money should go or who is the best person to send to a workshop, that's where my skill is, and building programs, that's where my skill set is. But at the same time, I also need to know how to manage budgets and how to make another client, so another person's budget, fit into what we offer. So it's many hats that you have to wear in a nonprofit, and I'm in what works very well is that level of satisfaction. So when you're going into a nonprofit sector, often it's volunteer work, or right at the beginning, you can't expect to make, a lot of money with the skill sets that you have. You're not going there to make, the $50,000 a year. That's not going to happen. But it is the extreme satisfaction of not just being in an environment of people who care about each other, but an environment of people who care about the work that they do. So, in my first 2 weeks, I was like, oh, no, did I just shoot myself in the foot? Am I going the wrong way? And then I went to a workshop, and you can see the light in young people's eyes, where they're like, I never knew I was a leader before. I never knew I could do this. I never knew I could start an event and raise funds and make an impact to somebody across the world. And it's working, and getting that feedback, that positive feedback from, the people that I work for, as well as the colleagues that I have in the community that's built, that's really satisfying. And I think this is a sector where you will get that satisfaction beyond the financial and the monetary and the comforts of everyday living, I suppose. Yeah.
And I'll reiterate, you saw the job posting on the career site.
And charityvillage.ca. But the career center.
Yeah. Yeah. Just one final thing. Is there anything that you wish you knew then? That someone maybe told you, or an experience that you wish you would have taken advantage of, or anything that you're looking now back at that you wish you knew or did?
No, I can't think of anything at the moment, Sarah, but I just laugh because I had the privilege of working with Rafaro as she was one of the students, and I think she's just a walking example. And there are many more of students who took opportunities of work-study positions, opportunities on campus, took full advantage of the things that were available outside the classroom, and built an incredible skill set, maximized on their already known talents, perhaps learned a few talents they didn't know they had, were an incredible help and boost to, again, a small number of staff that couldn't possibly deliver everything that we were hoping and mandated to deliver. But because we had these incredible students in our area, the potential was just exponentially, exciting and thrilling and wonderful. And then to see now, I've heard from many students, their opportunity years out, they're telling us that, oh, it's what I did. Oh, remember the year you hired me, Nora, to work in the red zone and, talk to students about coming to, I'm now doing this, and it's a direct relationship out of working there, or, Rafaro, or some of the other great folks we worked with, were just because they built on what they already had, and it's an amazing example of that. And I understand it's hard sometimes to dig out from under the books and the assignments, and they're all coming due at the same time, but these are great experiences, and they really do build on. And it does allow you to add to your arsenal of skills and transferability every time.
I think slightly related to that is the idea of a linear progression you go to high school, and then after high school you go to college or university, and after college and university, that's when you go into the working world, and that's where your career starts. For me, I realized about in my third year that that's not true. There is no linear progression. Your career starts from when you want it to start. And for me, my career started when I was university. From joining and volunteering in a student group, and managing that group and making sure that the group was a success had a direct relationship to where I am now and the skills that I have that are, you know, boosting me in the organization that I'm in now. So a lot of people are like, oh, no, I don't have time for that. You know, I need to make as much money as possible. My part-time job is just to make money. But I think a lot of the times is you have to think about, you know, where are you starting your career? Why are you starting your career and thinking of it after university? That's not where it starts. It starts now. And then, sorry, I've just been a little bit distracted. And so, like, I think that's the most important takeaway from working as a work study student here, as well as working with student organizations at York as well. As some of you might know, because I know a few faces here, I'm an international student, so I'm not even from Canada. I came here in 2006, and my intention was 4 years, and I'm back home, and that's when I'm going to start my career. And I realized that that's not how it works. And taking that first step and deciding, so how are you going to make it work? Whether it is, like, the people who started Me Too We and Free the Children were very, very young. Like, the person who started Free the Children, he started it when he was 12 years old. It's been going for 15 years. And it's just about the power of what your ideas are about. You can start an organization if you'd like, if that is where your interest lies. And when you're in university, you're learning the skills that will let that be a success. So there is no one path. And, you know, you could be starting now, or you could be starting, you know, coming back to university to, you know, get an even better career. But I know people in my organization who had extremely successful careers as lawyers, as people in the music industry, and they've come back because they've realized that caring about people and thinking about others and how you can make a better world is more important than how much money they make or how great a career seems to other people. Yeah.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you very much. And Krista Ayer is here.
Hi.
Chris.
Just your timing actually is perfect.
Sure.
We were just about to open for the the audience for you to ask your own questions, but before we do that, if I can ask you to just speak briefly about where you came from in terms of York, how you got started and what you studied, and your journey into Tempus and how that came about, because Chris, as I mentioned, is the founder and chair of Tempus International, which is, well, you can explain. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. First of all, sorry I'm late. I don't know if anyone was on TTC getting here, but there was a big delay, odds in the front row. Anyways, so I started at Glendon, actually. That's where I studied, and absolutely loved it, and graduated in 2005, which isn't that long ago, so it shouldn't be hard to remember. But I took international studies and political science, and also I took enough courses to have a minor in philosophy, but I don't know if York still does the thing where they only recognize one minor. It came in handy, the degree. Obviously, just having a degree, period, is very valuable. But to get involved in Tempus International, I actually did that while I was studying. And I think the setting that I was in was the most valuable thing. There were so many people around, people like you, that are just interested in international development that wanted to get involved in something. So I got a group of them together, and we started Tempus. Backing up just a little bit, actually, before that, I took a gap year between high school and university, spent some time in Nepal, and was really struck by how different it was and the opportunities that exist for young people in Canada and how they don't exist for young people in so many other places around the world. Like, for example, I went to a high school called Lauren Park in Mississauga, which is a pretty privileged area. Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Yeah. All right. Who knew? And I mean, a lot. Mark?
Yeah.
Mark at the back can attest that a lot of the guys there, a lot of the girls there, really had pretty much everything handed to them on a silver platter. And didn't have to work for so much, but could get pretty much whatever they wanted. And then you contrast that with these kids in Nepal, for example, where they're, you know, hardworking, intelligent, honest, great kids that, like, their biggest dream is to sell T-shirts because that would be great for them. And it just kind of struck me as not really all that fair. So, yeah, sorry, I'm distracted. I haven't seen Mark for 5-6 years. yeah, so that is what motivated me to get Tempest started. And since then, it's grown from really just myself and my buddies that started it to an organization. We grew to have about 100 people at one time, and then figured out that we were much more efficient as a small, lean organization. So now we have a team of about 12 people that take care of everything. We have 15,000 students participated in our last writing competition in Nepal, and we do that all on a budget of less than $20,000. So, yeah, my personal path there was basically see the need, be put in the right environment to get together with like-minded people, and then do something to address it. And I think that's something that pretty much anybody can do.
Great, thank you. So now that you all have had a chance to hear about each of the panelists' journeys, hopefully you've learned a little bit about their organization. This is your chance now to ask any questions that you might have. So keeping in mind the size of the room and how many of you are here, if you can please stand up and address your question to a specific panelist or perhaps all of them, try and make it as general as possible. You will have a chance to ask more personal questions at the end, so maybe a question that is applicable to a larger group. And if you can please stand up, and I'll repeat it just to make sure everyone can hear. So hands up. Anyone have a question? Yep, in the back. Question is to Chris. Any information you can give in terms of how you actually got funding and how you got your charity registered and yeah. How you got started?
Yeah. The first funding, which was minor, a couple hundred dollars here and there, which is necessary to go through just the registration process, came out of pocket. That was just paid for it. And then from there, to take it to the next step, basically, I threw parties. I'd organize a good party and invite a lot of people and charge $5 at the door. and we do that to this day. So there's going to be a big party end of January. that's what we do.
Well, I help at those parties. There are a lot of fun.
Yeah, Sarah's been. We throw good parties. And I touch on that later, maybe, about how within fundraising, I think that, you know, the first you have to have something that people would be interested aside from the cause. If you just ask them to give just based on what the cause is, not that many people are going to show up. But if you say, you know, we're going to have this band that you know, and we're having a party at the Badashoe Museum, which we've done, then people show up and then they ask, oh yeah, what's it for again? Then you can tell them all about the organization. So that's been the majority of our funding. It's been from events that we've held. We've received small grants, like just corporate donations, really, nothing significant. We've been chasing big grants, and it's, you know, we'll continue to do so, but have yet to receive anything of significant value.
Does anyone else have a question? Yes. Is what was the most challenging thing to get Tempest started, and how did you overcome?
At the very beginning, getting it started, the biggest challenge was getting charitable registration. The government loves red tape, and just kind of made it as difficult as possible, it seemed, for us to register as a charity. So actually, to overcome it, I'm lucky. A good friend of mine's a pilot and happened to be flying to Ottawa. So I hopped in the plane with him and knocked on a couple doors at Canada Revenue Agency and then got the registration.
Wow.
It worked.
Solutions based. Yeah.
Use whatever tools you have at your disposal, right? That But I mean, prior to that, a lot of persistence, you know, faxing documents back and forth and answering letters and then changing things. And a lot of, to give the Canadian government a little bit of credit, I was very, I had a very broad vision for what Tempest would be. And to be a charitable organization, you have to have a fairly specific mandate. And they helped me kind of narrow it down into something that allowed us to develop the programs that we have developed and focus our energy on one area in particular, which is literacy and education. And that, in the end, I think has benefited the organization.
No,
I've been talking for a bit.
Sure. So I actually had a sit-down conversation with Mark Kielberger, who started MeToWe, and was very influential in the beginning and the formation of Free the Children. And, I mean, the average age of everybody who is in the organization is about 25 years old. And, you know, I asked him, so because that's where my interest lies, is in starting a nonprofit organization in Southern Africa. And he said the first thing that you have to do is get the right people and get the right mix of skills, and make sure that you have five or six people who are super passionate and don't mind staying up night after night, working hard to finish a project, to finish a grant proposal. But as well as having those people who can wear that hat of a critical analyzer, of looking at things and saying, okay, maybe that doesn't really work that well, and not being afraid to be knocked down. That's for myself. That's why I'm part. Like, this is my process into entering, into creating my own, you know, nonprofit, is to learn as much as possible as I can from this perspective. And I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, you know, it could also be a business, and that's what a social enterprise is a business with a social conscience. And how can I make that effective, and how can I build it in such a way that it will have a social conscience and still think in a business way, but through the work that it does, be able to contribute to a better world? And I learn that every day from the people that I work for, where the workforce has gotten from very, very small, like started with 12 kids, to now there's over 250 employees across Canada and across the world, in Kenya, in Ecuador, and in India and in China, and is also hosts one of the largest events that inspire other young people to also follow that dream and have the confidence. Has anybody ever heard of We Day? Yeah, and We Day is MeToWe and Free the Children. And I worked at We Day. I spent 18-hour days learning about how to direct the youth who are coming to make sure that they were there on time, and just part and being able to interact with the people who are organizing that is so key to understanding what can make my own nonprofit and my own ideas that much better and that much more successful.
I think to build on some of Rafaro's points, you know, we're an organization that actually has an operating budget of several million dollars a year. That being said, some of it comes from the Ministry of Social Services. Other money comes from United Way. So our reporting to them and our accountability, not only to ourselves as an organization, to the donors that give money, but also to these government ministries, is quite stringent. So you can't be, isn't it great? You have to have very strategic thinking and planning attached to what you're doing and why you're doing it. Even to the point of, you know, where now this is where I'm going to take a bit of a run at the government, where the government, you know, a ministry is giving you some money, but they're suggesting that, you know, although right now here's your budget and they're a big part, a big chunk of that money, but they're suggesting ways that you spend the money that actually they don't have any controls over. For example, our organization strongly believes that not only are we helping the women and children that we're helping right now, but a big part of our thing is education. So we have a community outreach person who goes into high schools and is part of the curriculum in the high schools talking about healthy relationships, you know, safe and healthy, good relationships that will hopefully contribute to eventually the eradication of domestic violence. We need to help people understand that this is culturally not acceptable, politically not acceptable, humanely not acceptable. And you know, as this young person in our organization has talked to 10,000 high school students in the course of the year and has rarely given a presentation where somebody doesn't self-disclose to her at the end of the presentation of a situation that she's been in or a friend's been in. And yet you've got the ministry saying, you really don't need that education. We don't fund education. You're going, huh. As an organization, you better be ready to dig your heels in and say, hang on a second. Strategically, we know that this is important. Are we going to eliminate domestic violence overnight? Probably not. But we're going to do what we can to have the next generation coming up and understanding what we do. So you better be ready to make some firm thoughts and strategic thinking and what you want to do and why you're doing it and be ready to fight for it. So that can be very, very challenging. So as wonderful as it is to have some funding coming from external sources, your reporting to them is challenging, and you better be ready to go toe-to-toe the odd time to say that, no, we're going to hold tight here and do what this organization has mandated itself to do.
I would say that, I mean, in my case at least, the skills that I have now are more a result of the process that I went through than the cause of that process. I think having started it and run the organization for the last 7 years is where I've learned everything. I had no idea what I was doing when I started. And it was just kind of learning as I went. And part of it for me was a little bit of frustration with trying to volunteer for larger organizations, and your choice was either, you know, call people and ask for donations or file documents, and you really couldn't have any kind of impact on it. Combine that with the direct need that I saw when I was in Nepal for just, you know, kids that couldn't afford to go to school. Let's get money to these kids so they can go to school. And I was in a position that I thought I could address that need directly and more efficiently and more effectively by doing it myself with some buddies than any other way. So I just did what I thought made sense.
Amazing.
Thanks.
Does anyone else have any questions? Yes, in the back. Yes. So based on your opinions and your views, if you can provide any insight into whether you feel a bachelor's degree or going further and studying at the master's level or getting a second degree perhaps would be beneficial for this line of work, just based on your opinions.
Well, both of them are like, go refer. They're like, no, I don't want to. They can, I mean, they've been working in it so much longer. They could talk, I mean, Nora and Chris could talk a little bit better. But for myself, like I said, I just graduated, and I decided that I was going to take a year off to decide where I was going to go and what my vision was. And, you know, just even to decide where I wanted to go to grad school. But I think the big difference is it depends on what you want to do in the nonprofit sector. So if you're looking to start an organization, you know, you could start it now. You don't necessarily need a master's of whatever to give you credibility to yourself. However, if you're thinking of starting a career in the nonprofit sector, working for a nonprofit organization, then having those credentials might be a little bit more helpful to you. That's the way that I see it, like just in the way that I've looking and observing from the people who run my organization at the moment. They all received, with the exception of Mark Kielberger, they all received their MBAs and all the other master's degrees as a result of realizing that they needed those skills to run the organization more efficiently and more effectively. However, I realized that if I wanted to go and work for a large nonprofit in Southern Africa, I would need to have that master's degree to give me credibility to start to get into that organization. So it really depends on where you, I feel that it depends on where you are and how you are visioning where you're going with your interest in the nonprofit sector.
You certainly don't need the master's degree for the volunteer type of role that I do. It's not necessary. More education is always wonderful and interesting, and you can add and build on your experience to your education or your education onto your experience. And there's no, I think, one answer or wrong answer. And I suggest that, you know, Rafaro's thought that it's not linear necessarily. Often these things are happening at the same time. So that's where you follow your heart on what's going to work best for you and your energy level right now and the credentials that you think you're going to need. We certainly have a lot of people that work in our organization that are master's trained and speak more. Well, our little group have people, we cover 25 languages, so that no matter what language a woman speaks as she walks through the door, there's going to be someone that can hear her, listen to her, and respond to her. A board member doesn't need one of those 25 languages. They need that other expertise for governance and oversight of the organization. But certainly the people working in our organization have lots of education, very, very specific education, to be of benefit to the people that they help.
I agree. I don't think anyone can say anything except it's an individual choice. Mm-hmm. But one piece of advice I'd give is, instead of just thinking of it as doing a master's or not doing a master's, what else would you do with those 2 years? If you're going to have 2 years of field experience versus a master's, for some, in many cases, that field experience is going to be much more valuable. If you're going to, you know, go ski somewhere for 2 years, it might be a lot of fun, but that's not going to get you the job. So it depends on the alternatives to doing the master's, and that's on top of your more long-term goals. The other thing to keep in mind is you don't have to do a post-grad or a grad degree immediately after your undergrad. You can go out, work, see if it's the field that you really like. I mean, get some experience in it before you invest however many years studying. Maybe test it a little bit, see if it really is something you enjoy, and then if you do and you aren't happy with how you're progressing with just an undergrad, then look at going back to school. It's always an option too.
Great question, thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. Recap. I'll expand. I promise.
So the question is directed toward Nora. With all the cutbacks, especially for organizations that help women, is there anything that your organization is doing to get funding elsewhere, or how you're managing that challenge, that obstacle?
And it is. It is a challenge and a constant challenge. And you're right. As political parties are in power and not, they all have slightly different mandates. No one's ever going to tell you they're not interested in helping eradicate domestic violence, but their money and their energy will go into other pockets, and this is where you really do have to work at it. So we certainly try and take a holistic approach to where we get our money from. So, yes, we have definitely money coming from the ministry. We're ministry sponsored. We definitely put an application into United Way and go after those dollars as well. We fundraise. There's a component of our budget that is supported through fundraising. So we're constantly, and then we have individuals that, one individual that part of her job, and again, typical nonprofit, everybody's wearing two or three job descriptions. You don't get one thing to do. But in amongst the other things she does is she writes the grant proposals. So we're going after funding from various grant foundations. And again, you have to express your ideas, have very clear idea what you're doing. And even if you only yield a 20 or 25 or perhaps some years a 40% success rate in those dollars, they tend to come for very specific things. So it's $10,000 from IBM for new computers. It's very specific funds. It's great. It's needed. Every bit of it's needed. But you've got to really dance quickly to keep all those different places. And you you address the politicians. You address them specifically and at poignant times where you can keep their attention and their eye on your need. There's amazing and important great causes out there, no shortage of them. So the challenge is you're trying to be talking at the right time, a little bit louder than the others, so that you can be heard and that your cause can get addressed. Yeah. It's a juggling act for sure, absolutely.
Does anyone else have a question? Okay, we have two. So the guy in the back and then you right up. So the question is how Chris went about and developed the connections and networks internationally.
The Tempest was started with our Nepali country director. Her name's Kusum, and her and I met when I was first there, kept in touch, and kind of came up with the idea for it together. And she's been instrumental in developing all of our projects within Nepal. Going back to visit as well has helped. I've met more people there. And partnering with other organizations, there's a group called REED, that stands for Rural Education Development. They build libraries across Nepal, and we used their libraries as centers to host our projects. So just through networking within that community. And then once you start doing things. I don't know how people get my email address, but they get it. And I get, every week I'll have someone from another country contact me and say, hey, let's do something together. And I think more often than not, it's a scam of someone trying to just get money sent to them. But there are a lot of legitimate organizations that will search for you once you've got past that initial hump and just got started.
Questions around what's the turnover in your organizations? Like, do you have problems recruiting people and maintaining, keeping them where they're working, and things that you do to motivate?
So the question is what the turnover rate is, how you keep volunteers, I suppose, people who aren't getting paid, how do you keep them motivated, how do you keep them passionate about the cause?
For the people, and as well,
and
the
even
people
the employees
who get paid, because it's not like the private sector.
You're right. There are no dividends coming, or Christmas
well,
bonuses
there's
coming. There's social dividends, but not ones that directly affect the pocketbook. And I think that's a really good question, because I think it's a challenge of most organizations. Any organization that's interested in sustaining itself really wants to think about that question, because if they don't, they're going to get taken back. The staff in our organization, we have a lot. Oh, we have one woman in particular that has been with the organization for 22 years in the courthouses helping women. All of a sudden, you're now in a criminal situation where your spouse has been charged, and now you don't understand how the criminal situation went, and there she is explaining it, and she's done it for over 20 years. Like, remarkable. We've had many people like her that are in the organization for years. But if you can imagine, the opportunity for burnout is significant, especially when you're dealing with such harsh realities of often very horrible situations, and young kids are involved, and it's really challenging, and that burnout is a real concern. So there's a lot of professional development within the organization, and not expensive consultants coming in. We can't afford them, but self-care amongst the community itself to make sure that people stay well and stay healthy so that they can do their job. Within the volunteers, board members, yeah, we lose board members because of they've still got young families and, you know, an extra challenger. They're part of that sandwich generation. All of a sudden their parents get ill, and now they've got young kids and parents, and, you know, their volunteer work just has to go on a back shelf for a short while. And that rollover happens. And, you know, typically we're trying to usually fill one or two board members a year. They've been with us 7-8 years, and it's time to move on, etc. So that is a challenge. So you're constantly out looking for a different skill set or more people that have the capacity to join us. We're very clear in our volunteer exactly what you're getting into. It's going to be probably X number of hours a week or a month, you know, so that people know what to expect. So managing expectations, that this is what it means. Sitting on a board isn't actually, you know, holding a seat once a month in a meeting. It's actually roll up your sleeves and get to work in a nonprofit organization. So there's lots to do. So that's how the staffing is one thing, the volunteers and the board members are another, and yeah, it is, it's a constant, it isn't a laboring challenge all the time, but it's always on the horizon that, you know, there's a good chance there's going to be turnover, there's a good chance we're going to lose somebody, or that somebody's going to need to take an extended leave so that they can recoup, or they go back to school to get their master's degree. So it's constant.
In my organization, as I said, it's very young. So they, and, you know, I've experienced people who are transitioning out as well as people who are transitioning in. And it's exactly what Nora said. It's that the management of expectations right from the get-go is what is the most important, is saying, you know, you might be work. There is this event where you'll be working for maybe a month or more with 18-hour working days and almost no weekends. Can you handle it? And if you can't handle it, then maybe you're not the best fit for this organization. But you would probably be successful in another organization where that demand isn't right. And it is very much, I think, a personal choice, as well as having such great opportunities for mentorship, for professional development within the organization itself, travel opportunities within the organization, being able to go on one of our volunteer trips, facilitating for young people who are going on a Me2We volunteer trip in Kenya, where you actually do receive that social dividend so directly. There are times when I am so tired from work, and then I go into a workshop, and you can't describe the difference that you can see your work is making, where a young person, like, seriously, who's never had anybody tell them that they could be anything else other than, you know, flinging, you know, making burgers at McDonald's, or you can't be a leader in your community, and seeing them realize and write an action plan that they can do it. And those kind of opportunities where I can actually see the direct benefit of me typing up, you know, proposals in the office is what can really keep people going. So there are tons of opportunities to do that within the organization, and they build it out in such a way that you can get that, you know, you can understand and feel the results of the work that you're doing every single day. And I think that's what's the most important thing, and also having that expectation. You know what you're getting into. Yeah,
managing expectations is definitely out there. And the other one that I'd say is just selecting the right people to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of Tempest, we've always made sure that we don't take people who are in it just for the money, and we do that by not paying anything. So
hey, they do a lot.
Make sure that everyone that gets involved is in it because they want to be there. Mm-hmm. And when they want to be there, then it doesn't really fall on my shoulders or on the organization to motivate them. It's these people come and are motivated already. We just selected our third executive director. So after I realized that I need to make money in my life, so I decided I couldn't do it full time forever. Someone named Bonnie Shepherd took over, and she last month was offered the position as a business manager for UNICEF after her experience with Tempest. So it, which is exactly why she got into Tempest in the first place, is because she wanted that kind of launching pad into the larger nonprofit organization world. And now we have someone else who's the exact same as Bonnie was 2 years ago when she started. Nick is our new executive director. He worked for Plan Ireland for a little while, which is part of Plan International, and he was just doing anything that anybody could do. Nothing really significant in terms of like requiring specific skills, but still important stuff. Just the day-to-day office tasks. And he has a master's in development, and he wants to take it to the next level, so he's come in, and I know he'll stay with us until he gets another great job offer. So that's it. The right people.
I have a question at the front, yeah.
I can ask a related question then. Most of us are here because we're trying to figure out if a career in the nonprofit world is actually realistic, because it sounds like, and we've been hearing, maybe you can't make a living out of it. So in your experience, can you make a living? How big is the trade-off? Most of us are coming out with student loans. We can't afford to volunteer with GAs,
Yeah.
So maybe speak about a little bit what your experience is and if it is changing or not.
Okay, so the question is, for anyone and everyone who has a student loan or looking to actually build a career, a paying career in the nonprofit sector, if there's anything you can speak to on that, or is it, what's the realistic aspect of working in it?
What are the
for the long term?
Well, I think that Bonnie's a perfect example of that, the executive director that came right after me. She is now making actually a fairly good salary at UNICEF, and that is entirely possible, but it's not something that she went straight out of school and got into. It took years of getting experience. She worked for U of T first, and I think she worked there for like 8-9 years. And then worked there on a kind of altered schedule while she was spending about half her time on Tempest stuff for 2 years, and now she's ended up exactly where she wanted to be. So it's, I don't know if there are really shortcuts to get there, but if that's what you want to do and you're persistent and you stay with it, then I think it's entirely achievable for anybody. It's never going to pay a ton of money. There are other benefits to working in the nonprofit sector that can't really be equated with money. And if you want to do it as a full-time job, that's just something you'll have to accept, that you're never going to be rich. For some people, that's not an issue. For others, it is. But yeah, then there always is the other option, such as the route that I've taken, which is I'm still very much involved, but I have a full-time job that has nothing to do with it.
I've asked quite a few people who work at Meet We and at Free the Children, who I know were making really great salaries. One of the people that I worked very closely with during We Day had been I think she was a director or assistant director in development for Red Cross. And it was after the experience of seeing the direct influence and the direct difference that she attended a We Day, saw the difference that could be made. Like, the impact is direct. You can see the change that it makes in people's lives. She quit and she joined Free the Children. She said she threw things in her apartment, put them in storage, moved in with her mom. But she's living every day-to-day life. We're not saying that you're not going to be able to live comfortable. You won't be able to live in an amazing apartment. It is a struggle to pay student loans. I have lots of friends who are, counting the dollars, but they really enjoy what they do. And I know it doesn't sound like a huge thing right now, but it is so important to enjoy what you do every day. To come into the office and be happy that you're there. To wake up every morning and be so excited to go to work. And that's the opportunity that it gives you, and that's the experience that it gives you. Whether it's a launching pad from university to, you know, going on to other things, going into other sectors, but it does take a lot out of you. And that is an expectation that I think anybody who goes into the nonprofit sector has, is that, you know, I might not get paid a lot, but what I'm getting back, that I think, what you realize is that is that monetary value that important? Is that financial value that important? And yes, you do have to, like, I don't pay rent anymore. We have staff housing at MeToWe, which is great. They even come in and clean for you. I just discovered that today in staff housing. But it's part of life is you have to pay rent, and I did it. You pay rent, buy groceries. There are people who work at MeToWe who have kids and who are enjoying their lives. They're not like counting pennies at the end of every month, but they're enjoying every single moment that they are in the organization that they're working in. So the opportunities I see for myself, the opportunities for growth and to reach a certain level in the organization itself. So I think that's something important to look at where you join and what position you start in and what your career path is.
I think of our social workers that work as counselors in the shelter or in the outreach counseling. And, you know, their education directly led them to their jobs, their positions right now. So, I mean, they're meeting their expectations of the career that they wanted to be in. We certainly pay them market value because we'd lose them. We'd lose them mm-hmm. far too quickly if we didn't remunerate them for their education and their expertise. But certainly for all the other volunteers, we all have regular day jobs that has nothing to do with mm-hmm. with our interest and our passion for this organization. And so there's great capacity. And even though a busy work day, work week is here, it's amazing how when you have an interest in a genuine concern for what you're doing, you find the energy to do do what you want to do for this organization. We've had lots of other opportunities too where people have come in as just, you know, our executive director right now started off as a manager, you know, started off as a counselor and then into a management position and eventually grew into the executive director. Yes, the organization had a lot to do with her professional development to making sure she was building on the skill sets, but she is quite well paid for what she does. But she also runs, often seven days a week, depending on certain times of the year. You can appreciate we're now heading into the holiday season where a lot of people are kicking back a little bit in their day job, and that's when places like the shelter will go into overdrive and will be at 100% capacity and trying to find safe places for many other people that we just don't have room for. And so she'll be working, and her whole team will be working through that. So sometimes it isn't just a question of you're in the field you want to be in, you're getting actually well paid, but there are you have a passion for it because that's what's carrying you through those long days.
Yeah. If I could just add one more thing is one of the Career Center staff here can probably quote how many jobs you're likely to hold this generation in your career, and I don't know how many it is, but
four.
Something high.
Nine.
Right?
Staff
kind of
said nine to 12.
So 9 to 12. So this could be one of them, and it's a great way to. I mean, when you're still young, yeah, you have student loans. I know I definitely did. And it is not going to be the most glamorous life, but you can still make money in the future. You can say, you know what, for 5-10 years, I want to do something that I just really enjoy, and I'm going to, while you do it, you're going to gain fantastic experience and all these skills that will definitely put you in a great position to get a private sector high-paying job.
Right up to university, doing working part-time in a clerical job, and by the time I left,
And we had a question in the back. Did you still have a question?
Yeah.
She wants to know how much people will get paid. Yeah, like numbers.
If you work for Tempest, it's zero. Nothing. Nothing.
Well, at Me to We, the Kielbergers, Craig and Mark, are both part of the Young Presidents organization, which is, and they founded their organizations, right? And the Young Presidents organization is an association of people who are under the age of 40 who are CEOs of companies that make over $1 million a year, make or raise within, like, in terms of turnover. So there is the opportunity, you know, of getting to that point. But, for example, like, if you're a manager, you can't be, you're not going to expect to start, like, right at that top point. I mean, it took them 15 years to get there, and they're highly, like, Mark Kielberger is, you know, an Oxford graduate. He's he has a lot under his belt to get to that point. But our managers, they, like, one of the directors in our organization just bought herself a house as well. So you do have those progressions, but that's not where you're going to start. You're going to start at making, you know, what I make, which is not a lot of money. And I can actually tell you, because they do list it, it's $25,000 a year. And it's not great, but I can see myself and I can see that I could make more. And there's a lot in being part of that kind of organization where I can actually go in and say, I can see myself making more because I see other people making more. And even if it is a launching point into another career in another nonprofit, I also know that even though I'm starting at that low point, I can get to a higher point. If you're volunteering, it's a completely different it's a completely different way of looking at it, because you will have a full-time job that it may be unrelated to the work that you're doing.
Yeah, and the social workers in our organization are in the neighborhood of between $40,000 and $60,000 a year, because that's what social workers mm-hmm. get paid. Our executive director, now she is probably one of the highest paid executive directors in a non-for-profit organization in York Region, but she's over $100,000 a year. Did that answer your question?
Yeah.
Does that help? Yeah. I'm aspiring to that. If I could change the world and do that, then yeah.
I would estimate for the comparison to private sector, you're probably looking at 10 to 20% below what you'd be making to do the same thing in the private sector.
That's a good guess.
I don't have anything to base that on except a wild guess, but that's my guess.
Yeah, I did a lot of research before joining the organization and into the nonprofit sector, and at an entry level, it's about $25,000 to $35,000 a year.
Very real question. Yeah, very practical. And we have probably time for maybe one or two more questions, so I know you had your hand up.
I was reading an article, and it said that the average person will change his or her career path about 6 to 7 times. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if this question is more personal for all you guys, if it's personal, disregard it, but I'm going to see yourself in 5 years from now. You'll still see yourself in the same position. Obviously, as well, a bit more, but where do you see yourself in 5 years from now? 5 to 10.
Good question. Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
5 years, I really wouldn't mind being retired. I think I'm a grandmother. I've got a couple of things I could be doing. Yeah, I know. And no, it would be nice to be retired from my day job if things can sort themselves out, only because I could so easily, I'm telling you, if I wasn't working tomorrow, I would get up, have a shower and go right to work on Yellow Brick House, because there is no shortage of things I could be doing there. So you wouldn't see me for my dust. I would be on to the next thing, which would be a real privilege. And if I get that opportunity, that's great. If I'm not, and hopefully still working at the university, this has been a great opportunity. And I think what Jeff said earlier, great, we basically operate like a non-for-profit organization in the sense that there's always lots of opportunities. I've had several great careers at York doing different jobs and building skill set and keeping myself, enjoying myself and enjoying my job and enjoying this university by changing. So there's always lots of good opportunity. That's my dream, though.
5 years from now, I'm hoping that I would have, I'm looking to return to Zimbabwe, which is my home country, and although I would have hopefully like an executive director position in an existing nonprofit there, be in like have set the groundwork for my own nonprofit organization, which would focus on rural youth leadership in Zimbabwe or in Southern Africa as a whole. So that's where I'm hoping to be in 5 years from now.
In 5 years, would be happy to stay where I am in terms of my involvement with Tempest. So I'm the chair of the board right now, which is nice because I get to be involved in all the decision making, but it doesn't take a huge time commitment, and that means I can spend the rest of my time developing my career for 5 years from now. Who knows where I'll be there.
I think on that note, we'll end the formal Q&A and allow you now to ask questions to the panel themselves. So just to let you know, just a couple of items. If you need any help in terms of your career journey, if you're looking for guidance in terms of what you should be doing with your degree, if you're looking to get help on your resume, we offer those types of services. So please be sure to take a Career Center handbook before you leave. There's some on the table. In terms of registration, I just want to quickly mention, we usually have you register in advance online through our system. In this particular case, there were a lot of people that didn't show up, and so for those of you that just signed in, we certainly had space for you. That might not be the case in the future, so it's really important to sign up online and register.
Oh, I'd like to actually make a really strong plug for the Career Center. She has nothing to do with it, but I had the privilege of being very involved at York. I had so many things on my resume. But I didn't know how to best put it forward. So if you're really looking, and I've had friends apply for jobs at MeToWe and not be successful, and I've taken a look at their resumes, and I look at them, and I'm like, maybe not the best. Have a career, like have an expert, and you have a free expert. You have free experts to come to look, to take a look, to walk you through how to make your resume look really good. So, like, I know it sounds weird. I did work at York for a long time, so I'm used to plugging for them. But seriously, my resume is stellar, and it's because of going to the Career Center and asking for that help, because I didn't think that I needed it. But obviously I did, and I was able to get lots of job offers,
Thank
so that's
you,
great.
And you're checking your mail.